Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your hosts are Michael McNamara and me, Ryan Schwan. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show, the pre-free agency show, where we get to talk about all the exciting new players. So before we get to that, Michael, we did have an extremely important, massively impactful event. It was the NBA draft. Came through and completely changed the face of this team. Were you excited by what happened on draft night?
I've already ordered my cash considerations jersey.
So I actually told my 13-year-old son what they did, and he had an idea. What we should do is take the cash considerations and put them into $30,000 suitcases, each one $30,000. And then during the season, in the middle of games, open them and toss them out on the floor in front of the other team's players, particularly the ones who have low salaries. And I mean, they're going to jump all over that. It's got to be worth at least a couple points a game, right?
Well, if the guys with low salaries on the court, I would think we would have already won or lost the game. But I respect your son for his creative thinking. Yeah, I mean, the first question people were asking is whether ticket prices will come down or, you know, at least the cost of a beer in the arena. And I mean, I know it's a frustrating thing. I remember the last time that Dell sold the pick. Do you remember off top who the immortal guy that the Knicks took with the pick they paid us $1 million for?
It was a center. Started with an H, maybe?
Last name did start with an H.
Oh, I did pay attention to him a little bit, but I can't remember what his name was.
Well, he was a white
center, start with an H.
But I guess that's kind of the point, is that people were upset about it. You can't even remember his name. His name is Josh Harrelson.
Yeah.
I think I just saw he is going to be playing in the summer league like 4 or 5 years later again, trying to just earn a roster spot. I mean, I get it. People stayed up. I was up my time zone to like, it was close to midnight. I don't know. It must have been midnight or close to midnight for most people. They stay all the way up. The Pelicans pick a guy, somebody that they had heard of, you know, in all likelihood, and then just to hear it gets traded. But again, I put that article out. I did my research. Over the last 9 years, 99 picks, you know, 50 through 60, 99 picks. Do you know how many of them are currently rotation players in the NBA? Picks 50 or later in the last 9 years.
50 or later?
In the last 9 years. Of the 99, how many do you think are rotation players? We both know Isaiah Thomas is one.
Yeah. So based on my previous research, but I don't remember the exact numbers, I would guess that there's probably three.
There's two. Isaiah Thomas, who is obviously an outlier, and then Patty Mills, who was drafted and then in and out and in and now is a rotation player. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. People want to think about the possibilities and get excited, but I think it's clear, and Dell tried to let us know this before this, you know, draft and some of his interviews and, you know, things he said in the press conference. I think it's pretty clear the Pelicans punted on this draft. They met with a couple of guys. They did their, you know, their scouting for future years if and when these guys become available in trade or free agency. But I think it's really clear that they like their core. They're going to give it a shot with this core, and they're going to add, you know, some depth in the off season with a couple other pieces. You know, cash doesn't get people excited, but I'll just say that Harrelson, and I'm not expecting it to be this big of a deal again, but we talk about that Harrelson and trading that pick for money. That money led to going to Spain and buying out Gustavo Ayon, who came to New Orleans, had a solid year, and then was traded for Ryan Anderson. So, in a roundabout but pretty direct way, the last time Dell Demps sold a pick that was Josh Harrelson, he ended up with Ryan Anderson. So people always try to judge Dell's moves in a vacuum. That Tyshawn Taylor was the last time he also took, you know, cash in a trade that seemed pointless. I don't even know if anybody remembers that, but we did that Tyshawn Taylor trade with the Nets, got $1 million for our trouble. That money was used to go buy Luke Babbitt out of his contract, and we've gotten, you know, a solid year and a half of production out of him. So judging any of Dell's moves in a vacuum is always a fool's game. You know, it usually sets up to something else down the line.
Yeah. So, I mean, I did spend a lot of time drooling over this draft. I know you liked drooling over this draft, too. I only have one final question for you about today. Looking at that draft, do you feel that this draft is better than, equal to, or worse than the previous year's draft, where people were wetting themselves with the urgency to get draft picks to try to get someone from that draft?
I think it'll be slightly better than. I think it'll kind of hinge on the three international guys, and I'll call, you know, account Moutier as one of those, just because, you know, we haven't seen those guys over here. But I think it's slightly better at the top, and then a lot of fringe guys. But yeah, I never really bought into that 2014 draft being an all-timer. I mean, I wrote a column about it a year before saying that it wouldn't be that. So I think this one will be slightly better. I was honestly a little upset that the Lakers changed their mind and made the smart move.
Yeah.
That was a little frustrating. I mean, I think your top two guys by quite a way ended up in the West, which is already stacked. And you know, I liked Moutier. Moutier was one of my top two guys. He ended up in the West. You know, I think the Heat got Winslow. That was good. I'm glad, you know, that one solid player went out East. But, you know, and maybe Porzingis, you know, hits it big, and I'll be glad he's out East. But, again, I felt like coming out of this night, it seemed like the West got stronger. I didn't really see any teams in the East that, you know, got markedly better on that night.
Yeah. Yeah, I do want to say, like, that was really depressing when the Lakers got Russell. Like, I was really not happy about that. And the whole thing about, like, people want to discount the Lakers because they've been kind of almost a laughing stock, and because of this, the Sun supposedly being such a bumbling idiot and stuff like that. And they've had a couple, you know, not good seasons, and the Brandon Byron, who kind of can be a laughingstock, but let's just look at this realistically. They had Kobe Bryant at the very end of his career. they were going to have a tough transition year no matter what or two. And Mitch Kupchak, who built the last two title winning teams that the Lakers had and was the assistant GM under Jerry West the times before, he's still there. He's still making the basketball decisions. Like, dismissing the Lakers is kind of stupid, which it just makes the West so much crazier. Like, even like their schmuck teams have all the foundation necessary in a lot of situations to catapult themselves to the top if a few things go their way.
I wouldn't go that. I mean, the Lakers still have Byron Scott. The Kings still have Kings.
You think that if, let's say, something goes crazy this summer and the Lakers end up with, like, another two nice free agent additions, like, that team is still going to take a year to gel, and then you toss Byron Scott out, which is, I'm sure, I just consider him a caretaker coach, and they bring in a real one, and they get rolling.
No, I get it. I'm just saying I would count the Timberwolves, the Lakers, and Kings out of the playoffs next year. So now you're down to 12, and I really don't think Utah, Phoenix, and I wouldn't give Utah or Phoenix much of a chance either.
I agree 100%. But what I'm trying to say, though, is, like, even Utah and Phoenix, do you look at those organizations and say there's no way those teams are coming back into the playoff picture? Like, are they, like, so inept that it's going to take just dumb luck for them to return to the playoffs?
No, but as much as bashing as the East get, how many franchises do you say that about in the East? I think we look at the East collectively, but when we step back and break down each team, the only team I could definitely say will not be in the playoffs next year would be Philly, right? Like, who else is just an absolute – I mean, Orlando's starting to put together some nice pieces. They're going to have some free agent. Detroit's going to have some free agent room. So we'll see. I think the East gets lumped together as the East. Milwaukee's putting together something nice. You know, other than Philly, you could not tell me one team that you'd bet your life on isn't going to make the playoffs. So I think overall there's probably 25 franchises that, if they do the right things, you know, could be players in the next couple of years. And I think we're seeing that because the contracts are so much shorter now that, you know, and the cap's going up so much that back in the day you made a couple of 5-6 year deals and you were wrecked. And, you know, the only team really in that boat right now is Brooklyn.
Right.
But they're still going to have enough money to at least be respectable in the East. So, yeah, I think the NBA as a whole, I think the days of the Patsies and 5 to 10 teams as chalk it up as guaranteed W's on any night, I think those days are kind of coming to an end in general.
Yeah. Okay. That's our little wrap-up of the exciting draft that made me actually go on Twitter and say stuff like, this is boring.
Who would you have taken at 50? Do you think – is there anybody that was there at 56 that you think we're going to regret trading for $630,000 in cash?
No.
Was there any point in the draft where you were willing to give up a future first or wanted to see the Pelicans buy a pick or trade? Did you feel like anybody fell to a spot where you were, hoping that we would see a trade up or buying of a pick or trading of a future pick?
Well, I mean, there were guys who fell a little ways, and I kind of wish that there was a way to get them. But even, like, anybody who has a brain would have realizes that Justice Winslow did the Danny Granger, Paul Pierce fall. Like, that guy should never have fallen to 10th. In my book, he's a top 5 pick. And just because people were trying to grab some sort of ideal thing that fits perfect with their team, they let the greater talent slide. But let's be realistic. We would have to give up something pretty significant get the 10th pick in the draft. The Miami Heat are one of the smart organizations. They know what was falling to them. They're not giving up the 10th pick, so you'd have to have moved up even higher. And, I mean, there are reports out there that the Celtics were desperately trying to get 9 so they could get Justice Winslow. And everything that they were offering, like, they have an entire chest of drawers full of draft picks, and they couldn't get them to bite on.
Yeah, I think they offered 4 first rounders and 2 second rounders.
Yeah, I mean, that's just crazy. Like, and so what were you going to offer that was going to be there? There's nothing.
Right.
And there's a couple of guys that fell in the 20s that I'm like, I could see us trading next year's pick, because next year's pick, I'm hoping, will be like 20th or 22nd or something like that. So I could see a couple in there, but nobody that I was like, do that and the world is a better place. It's more like, yeah, that'd be kind of nice, but, you know, if it didn't happen, it didn't happen.
Yeah, and I think we saw, and they kind of said it, and I think we saw it coming of kind of how the bubble burst on how much a first-rounder is worth. I mean, we traded the 18th pick for Omer Asik. The Hawks traded the 19th pick for Tim Hardaway Jr., who is not a good NBA basketball player. The Celtics were sitting there at 16, and they couldn't move up to 9 with 5 additional picks added to 16. I mean, we kind of saw the Rockets were trying to trade that 18th pick. You know, we heard all those teams in that range trying to trade that pick, and nothing really happened. So, I mean, I think we see kind of what the value of middle to late first round picks are, and they aren't very high, which, you know, I think, again, when you look at Asik, Dell might have traded that pick at its peak, because if he waits till draft night, it could only get him Tim Hardaway Jr., apparently.
Right. Okay, so moving on, we're going to go to the extremely upbeat and exciting news of I guess, the past couple of days. I think I noticed it yesterday. I think the report came out. Maybe it was Friday. 76ers, good old 76ers, were ordered by the NBA to pay the New Orleans Pelicans $3 million because they never disclosed to the Pelicans that Jrue Holiday had played for several weeks on a stress fracture in his leg the last season he was there. So, Michael, do you want to go find Sam Hinkie and kick him in the balls?
You know, I mean, so this report was interesting. It's kind of gotten, you know, the majority of our fan base, or at least the majority of fan base who contributes on Twitter, message boards, and comment sections, pretty upset. You know, I've seen, it seems like the typical take now is the trade should be rescinded, we should get Noel and Saric and all this other stuff. I always caution on talking about stuff I don't have all the facts on. It seems like the Sixers are denying this. It seems like Jrue Holiday could have said something, right? Like, even in the worst case scenario, in which the Sixers say nothing, which, again, this wasn't a stress fracture, it was a stress reaction that, according to the timeline, would have been completely healed up by the time he took his physical with the Pelicans, which, remember, was a little late because he was on his honeymoon. Remember, it wasn't until like July 13th or 14th he finally met with us. So it would have been completely healed. Nothing would have shown necessarily in an X-ray or anything like that. So, you know, I guess in the worst case scenario, Philly doesn't say anything, but we still do our checkup. It doesn't show because it would have healed by then. You know, I'm sure they would have asked Jrue his medical history. I mean, is there a possibility Jrue doesn't say anything? I guess my thing is that my number one priority is looking forward. Like, this does not affect whether Jrue Holiday is going to be healthy or not next year, in my opinion. And, you know, I guess secondly, I guess I think the Pelicans make the trade anyway. I mean, if he gets a stress reaction and it's here, I'm trying to go back to, let's say it's July 13th. Stress reaction is completely healed. That we talked to Jrue. He's like, yeah, you know, I had this issue. We didn't know exactly what it was. We think it might have been a stress reaction, but it's fine now. We do the checkup. It's fine. You know, even with all knowledge, does Dell go back on the trade? I not even mean Dell, but would any GM who makes that trade now all of a sudden want the trade rescinded because of an injury that had happened months ago that is no longer there? I don't know what people are all upset about other than I'm at the gym a lot and I watch and Fox News is on the TV, and I understand we're now in a culture where people like to get mad about, you know, nothing, but I guess I don't fully get it.
Yeah, so no, I mean they absolutely make that trade. And you got to remember, like, Jrue Holiday got to New Orleans and was healthy enough that he played all through training camp, all through preseason, and for 3 months before anything started to flare up and cause him any trouble at all.
Right.
It wasn't like he was limping around. It wasn't like he was complaining about his leg and playing through pain. He was fine. So, like, there's nothing you can blame a doctor for not picking up. Like, a doctor was going to look at that record. And here's the thing I would say, though. Like, Adam Silver is not going to order the 76ers to pay the Pelicans unless they did something that violated the rules around something. Like, it's not going to be just like a good faith thing. He's like, you should have told them. It's going to be more like the rules are like, you send over their complete dossier, and the 76ers must not have sent over everything they were supposed to.
Right.
I mean, that's the only reason why you would actually fine a team for something like this. And again, like you said, like the question probably, like, I wouldn't even 100% guarantee that Jrue said anything about the stress reaction. Like, I don't know if they bring him in for the physical. They ask him, do you feel pain right now? Are you okay? He's fine. Like, and he's thinking, you have my charts. Like, why would he say anything?
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm upset, but only because it sucks, because that means that this is even more recurring than we thought it was.
Yeah. If Philly denies it, we don't have any of the information. It could have been that, you know, he saw an outside doctor. Philly didn't include that in the dossier, and they should have. I mean,
right.
We have no clue what it is. This is what, you know, it's such a rush to, I mean, that article was what, maybe 800 words and included 2-3 facts maybe. And now people are all jumping on to their conclusion.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing that would kind of upset me, and this is where I would imagine the Pelicans filed a claim and why they got rewarded, is that if the Pelicans would have known that maybe this was, you know, a possible conclusion reached by, let's say, one of three doctors. I'm making up a scenario in which one doctor said it was a stress reaction, two said, you know, it was just soreness from overexposure, whatever, and the Philadelphia didn't include that. The Pelicans could then say, well, if we would have known that, we would have monitored. And if you remember in that season, you know, when he first had the issue 2 years ago, you know, Jrue had kind of it said he complained or felt something, but just kept playing through it. You could have maybe said that the Pelicans would have been monitoring it from the beginning and could have been more proactive. And, you know, that was probably their claim to the league. And I get it. I don't know what Philly did or did not do. Obviously, the league found enough to award the Pelicans $3 million, but I don't know if that's because they failed to include one document from a doctor who had a differentiating opinion that, you know, I mean, Philadelphia didn't shut him down.
Right.
So, I mean, the guy kept playing through it all. So, you know, who knows? I guess I just, we could do all this speculating stuff, but we have like 1-2% of the facts at most. And really all that matters for the future is, you know, whether or not he stays on the court moving forward. So I just hope they put the full $3 million towards his rehabilitation. That's
right.
That's it. I would pay any amount of money to get him back on the court. And I think the Pelicans should too.
Yep. All right. So that is the most depressing thing that we have to talk about.
One more thing, like, people keep asking me, what can we use the $3 million for? What could we use the 630 we got in the draft trade for? That stuff cannot be used for actual cap purpose. Like, our cap doesn't go up, or we can't use that extra to spend on players. But a business is like any other business. You have cash flow coming in and cash going out. You know, I don't think Benson is just stuffing this money in his pockets. We spent more than all but seven other teams on salary last year. You know, he's putting up a new video board, like a new training facility that everybody, you know, is so excited about, except for the speakers when they do press conferences. Right. So, no, the money cannot be used for salary cap purposes, but I highly doubt it's just going into his wallet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, there was intimations last year. Omer Asik, we brought him in, and like everybody knows, he was being paid $15 million, even if he only counted $8 million against the cap. But there is a budget for this team, and I'm sure the $3 million will be incorporated some way into that budget. Like, you know, maybe we'll have an opportunity to do something like we did with Asik, where we're paying more than he necessarily counts against the cap, but that money still has to come from somewhere. So, all right, let's move on to something more exciting.
Yay.
Free agency. So, because Gordon opted in, we're kind of limited a little bit in what we can do here. But so we're going to spend most of this conversation talking about free agency and actual, you know, prospects of like, all right, so we decide whether we want Omer Asik or not, and then we have this much room to spend on players. But first, before we get to that, we're going to get to the pie in the sky section. So let's say, you know, Carmelo Anthony throws a hissy fit on the floor of Phil Jackson's, you know, office and demands Eric Gordon comes to the New York Knicks. So the New York Knicks call up and they offer us, you know, a bag of potato chips for Eric Gordon. And we decide that bag of potato chips sounds pretty good. So Eric Gordon is now gone. Or even let's say we find some other way to make clear out like $10 million or something around that area, $10 million, combined with not signing Omer Asik, renouncing the rights to him, we would be in the ballpark of a current max contract, which is, I think it's like 18 and a half or thereabouts for most of the players that we would be able to get that are in the prime of their career. So, Michael, let's say that miraculously happens. All we're doing is missing either Anderson or one of our guards. Who are you targeting? Like, let's just say we get this pie in the sky situation. Who is the guy you want the most?
LeBron James. Yeah, outside of LeBron, no. To me, my whole philosophy for – I don't have no clue what that was. My whole philosophy for this offseason will be is star or flexibility. That's it. Either I get a star in 2015 free agency or leave me as much flexibility as possible moving forward. So in that scenario – yeah, I mean, we could go get Damari Carroll maybe, or Danny Green, a guy that I really like. Wes Matthews, a guy I really liked before the injury. But, you know, at this point, I'm good with the continuity. And, yeah, I think this roster, even with continuity and health, maxes out as a second-round team that maybe could get to the Western Conference Finals if Anthony Davis just has an amazing postseason or whatever. But, I mean, I'm fine with that. It's all steps in the championship process. I wouldn't really want to, you know, do anything crazy unless it was for a star. So in that situation, maybe Marc Gasol or DeAndre Jordan, even though I think they're a little below that. But, yeah, Marc Gasol, for sure, I would do it for. But it doesn't seem like he's leaving. So, you know, that scenario – it honestly wouldn't really excite me that much because I'm at the point right now where it's star or flexibility to get a star down the line. So it would really, I think my list begins and ends with Marc Gasol in that situation.
DeAndre Jordan isn't on your list.
It would be tough. But I would probably say at the end of the day, I'd probably say no, just because it's really hard for me to envision a situation unless it's somebody like Marc Gasol, who's so versatile. Isn't it hard for you to imagine any situation where Anthony Davis is not finishing games at the five for not only next year, but the rest of his career?
Well, especially since DeAndre Jordan can't hit a free throw. Like, yeah. That makes that even worse.
Right, and that's why I say it could be a little different with Gasol, because Gasol, you know, he doesn't hurt your defense even if teams go small. You know, you could ice, and he's a really smart defender. He's not going to kill your defense. He'll be able to hit free throws. He could, you know, he's a great passer, so he could play in Gentry's offense. So Gasol would be the only guy, maybe in the entire NBA, who I could see Davis staying at the four at end of games for, regardless of matchup. So I think my list begins and ends with him. I know people like Greg Monroe, especially because they're somewhat local, or they are local. I don't see the fit. And, you know, people get so excited about roster change this time of year. And, you know, I get it, but I really don't see a path outside of continuity and adding depth, staying flexible for a star. You know, that's really going to take this team to a level that's much higher than what they could be with, you know, if they just get some health and continuity.
Yeah. I'm actually 100% on board with you. There are only three players outside of Marc Gasol who I think is, is staying in Memphis. Three players who I think could legitimately impact this team, and make them leap to the point where they might even be in contention for a title. That are not under full contract for next year. Two of them are, they are restricted free agents, and they're not going anywhere. That's Kawhi Leonard. There's no chance he's leaving San Antonio, so get it out of your head. And of course, I'm having suddenly a mind blank.
Jimmy.
Wow, that's really lame. I had my list right in front of me just a moment ago.
Butler, Draymond Green, Jimmy.
Draymond Green. Okay. I think Jimmy Butler's close to that. I'm not confident that he'll be able to be as impactful as Draymond Green or Kawhi Leonard would be. And then, of course, the one other free agent that we should all be dying to sign for big money is Austin Rivers.
LeBron, yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of ex players out there. John Stoutland is a free agent again.
Willie Green,
yeah.
But so yeah, I mean, this is just not like a free agency that's super exciting. Like Kevin Love, he plays the same position as Davis. I don't want him on my team, you know, in that kind of situation either. And like even Draymond Green, like how does he fit with Davis? Like you can do it because he's so versatile, but. Like, there's no perfect fit. There's no perfect player. Like, maybe you could make the case for Jimmy Butler, but I'm not even, like, 100%, like, on board. Like, he's the missing piece that you just go all in for. So, right, I'm like, even if we have the space, why not just wait for the chances next year, which will be much, much greater?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I'm also curious to see if any of these guys, both restricted or unrestricted, take one-year deals. Jimmy Butler's already hinting at taking a shorter deal. Chicago's coming back saying, nah, we're going to extend you, the highest qualifying offer possible, so you can't do shorter deals. Does Jimmy Butler come back and say, all right, I'll just sign the qualifying offer? I'm curious to see, you know, stuff like that and the games that are played there. Guy like Chris Middleton, same thing, or if they just give him a buttload of money. But yeah, I'll be curious to see, you know, who's available at 2016 and even before then. I mean, we saw DeMarcus Cousins, you know, get disgruntled and close to the trading block. There is going to be a high level player or two on the trading block in February. There'll be a couple more who are available next summer, like, you know, it's not just the free agents. So, mm-hmm. I'll be curious with that. But, yeah, that would be my main summer philosophy is star or flexibility. I'm getting one of those two things.
Okay. So then let's move on from the pie in the sky. These are the guys who might make an impact that we're probably not going to get. First, let's talk just the team in general. You, of course, already have a great post up there to explain this kind of stuff on our site. Just in general, what happens financially to this team? I know a lot of people don't really care for Ashik very much, but we do have his bird rights. So we can sign Omer Ashik to whatever we want. If we just put him in at like $8 million, if we manage to get him on the same yearly deal that he's at right now, we're basically at the cap at that point. So if we decide we don't want Omer Asik, does that gain us anything financially in order to be able to bring in more guys or different guys?
I mean, if you just let him go, if you renounce his rights, you're looking at, you know, maybe $8 million in cap space, depending. I'm assuming that we're going to keep Norris Cole, but, you know, you're looking at the ability to go get like an $8 million center, which might have been good a couple of years ago. I don't know what that gets you now. That, from what I've heard, that's going to be Brandon Wright's asking price. Kufos will get more than that. Robin Wright will get, or Robin Lopez will get more than that. I mean, Robin Wright. So maybe you like Brandon Wright better because he's more athletic. You think he fits. That's fine. But now you've also lost Bird rights to guys like Ajinsa, guys like Babbitt. And then you've also lost your mid-level exception, and you've also lost your biannual. So even if you think Wright is an upgrade over Asik, which I don't, but let's say you do, is he so much better that you would lose those Bird rights on quality players and lose the mid-level exception and the biannual exception just to, you know? So you're losing now the opportunity to put five solid guys in roster spots as opposed to the scenario with Wright, and then you have the room exception, which got us the wonderful John Salmons last year. So you're looking at that caliber of player. Is going from Asik to Wright worth all those other things? And I think the clear answer is no. So I just don't see a scenario. The only scenario I see is if you could find a team and then you could do a sign and trade with Asik, then, you know, that would allow you to keep your mid-level and, you know, all that stuff. Maybe the Pacers are ready to move on from Hibbert, but like Asik, and you could give them Asik and Tony Douglas's expiring contract. You bring Hibbert in for a year, you get to maintain that flexibility. Something like that. But if you just let Asik walk, you are foregoing many other opportunities to fill out this roster with quality depth players. And I think that's what people have to understand more than anything.
Yeah. Just to explain for those who don't know, Bird rights are the allow you to go over the salary cap to sign that player, to offer them a contract that goes past the salary cap. So basically that's the first step that has to fall. I mean, it is a way they could clear space. Last year, we didn't really expect them to do the clear space route to try to bring in people. They did anyways with Omer Asik. So let's say Omer Asik is going to be re-signed, though, because I think that is, we all agree, the most flexible. I think Dell will probably be a little leery of letting go a guy that he paid a draft pick to get. Omer Asik, today's market, you know that next year there's going to be tens of millions of dollars that every team can throw around in free agency. Omer Asik says, you know, his agent calls up, says he wants to be back with the team. Make your best offer. What is your best offer?
Okay, so I think my best offer maxes out at 3 years. To me, the years part is the part I got to think of first. Ideally, I would like two, you know, with a third year team option, or maybe even ideally one with the second year team option. So that'd be ideal, but you asked for my best offer. My best offer would be 3 years. I would start a little high and decline. So let's say I start at $11 million. So it would total out at about, it would be like $11 million, then 10.5, 10. So 3 years, $31.5 million, if I'm doing my math right, something around there. 3 years, $31 to $32 million, ideally with it starting higher and declining.
Yeah. Okay. I can't disagree with that. I think I said before, like 3 years, 30 was kind of what I was looking for. So it's pretty close to that. I think that's fair for a starting caliber center who situationally won't be amazing all the time. Does that hinder our flexibility? So if, let's say, that's what gets put on the table and that's what his agent accepts next year when we're going out into the market, are we going to be able to go after a max guy with that kind of contract on our salary cap?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, you're looking at about 25 for Anthony Davis. You would be looking at 22 for Drew and Tyreek, another 3 for Coupon, so let's just say 50 there. Then you would be right around $60 million when you consider those 5 guys. If you include Ashik, the cap will be around 88. So, yeah, you would be able to offer a max deal to, like, a Kevin Durant. And even if not, you would only be a couple under grand out. I mean, you'd get rid of a Pondexter anyway. But, yeah, it wouldn't stop you at all. And that's in the worst scenario in which you couldn't unload – you know, Usyk next year. So it wouldn't hinder you at all, and it would put a guy right there. I guess asking you, what would be – I mean, do you think that there's any chance that the playoffs hurt Ashik's value so much that we're way off on what he's actually going to get, and he's going to get way less? And then my second question would be, what do you think is the most that he could get where you'll see the report come in on your feed or on Twitter, or whatever, and you'll go, man, I don't like that contract, but I'm kind of not surprised. What do you think? We set our ideal guesses. What do you think is the actual ballpark of what his deals could be? The very lowest that's realistic up to the highest that is realistic.
I'm thinking I don't 100% believe that the NBA has bought everybody in the NBA has bought into these the new NBA. Like, if that was the case, they would have been switching over to the new NBA before this. You know, the Spurs really did it. I think there are some teams that would be willing to go after a center of this type, especially if they miss out on their big targets and, you know, they don't feel like paying Hibbert for, you know, a lot of money for a 1-year deal that may or may not get extended after this year. And he's probably going to take a little bit of trade assets to get your hands on anyways. So I could see somebody going out there and putting money down on Ashik. But let's say I'm completely wrong and the market has completely cooled on Ashik and Dell is as cool as a cucumber. And he's just like, we'll just see what the market brings you, and taps his finger and it tips together. And you know, if it ended up being as low as $7 million a year, I guess that wouldn't shock me, but I doubt it would be anything lower than that. I really do. High end, like if somebody falls in love with him, which I can't imagine will happen because of his offensive limitations, but let's say, you know, something in the neighborhood of 3 years, $42 million. That would be the high end, and anything north of like $12 million a year, I would be cringing at if the Pelicans were the ones who signed him to it.
Yeah, I mean, what did Ziller have Ashik ranked on his free agent? I wanted to say it was something like 46 or 49.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think about where he's going to rank in the pecking order. I mean, they're both on the free agent market. Let's say we're starting to hear, which I don't know how this is happening, but we're starting to hear about where players are going to visit. Let's say, well, they are. Omer Ashik and Brandon Wright are both completely – they're free agents, they're open to talk to anybody, and their agents call around and ask, you know, do you want to take meetings? Who has more scheduled meetings? I mean, Omer Ashik was ranked 47th on Ziller's list. You know who was 46? Al-Farouq Aminu. According to Ziller, a guy we've had on this podcast, who, I mean, I definitely disagree with some of these rankings, but he does his work, really smart guy. He has Brandon Wright, 43rd. You know, he has Aminu, 46th, who we'll talk about a little bit later. That's where he has a Sheik. He has him in the Amir Johnson, J.R. Smith, Jordan Hill. I mean, between those three guys, Jordan Hill, Amir Sheik, and Brandon Wright, who do you think has more meetings scheduled, you know, starting July 1st? Who? 30 teams. How many are interested in each of those guys?
I don't know what Jordan Hill's off the court situation is because he's had some troubles there, but I would say that he probably had the most meetings if that's not a concern. And then it would be a Sheik, and then I think Brandon Wright would be third because like Wright is just, he's a backup center who can do one thing extremely well.
Yeah. I mean, he's higher on this list. Kufos is higher on this list. Ed Davis is higher on this list than a Sheik. So, you know,
that's kind of silly.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some I disagree with on here, but, you know, where he has a Sheik rank, like, you're looking at guys, I mean, he has him below Corey Brewer, who we'll talk about later as a mid-level exception guy. You know, so where he has him ranked, I don't know. I mean, are we crazy that... Does no team offer more than the mid-level exception, and then all Dell has to do is beat that, and he gives them, you know, 2 years, $13 million, and the second year is an option for a Sheik? Would that be crazy? I think that's less crazy than some three-year, $42 million deal. I just, in a lot of ways, when we start to get up to the 9 and 10 million, it would just feel like it would be Dell bidding against himself. I've looked through all the teams. I don't know what other team in the NBA offers him more than $10 million a year. I don't see how that happens.
Okay.
So I don't know, but I mean, that's the thing where teams do bid against themselves. Do you think anybody was $5 under the Jody Meeks bid last year, and Detroit just beat that? So, you know, and it is something where Dell gave up a pick for him. So I'm really curious. I think I would be upset. To me, the years would upset me more. I think I would be upset at a 4 or 5 year deal, you know, especially if it averaged $10 million a year or more. 2 or 3 years, I think I would be upset with anything over $11 million. So that's kind of my range. As long as it stays 3 years and under, you know, and then the shorter the years, the more I could stomach. I mean, I could stomach a one-year $13 million deal. I mean, why not? We're not losing anything, and it would actually be less money than we paid him last year. So, you know, I could stomach that. I could stomach 2 years at $24 million. But, you know, the more years we go up, I'm going to need – less money on it. So I think it would actually be the years that it would upset me more than the annual price.
I get where you're coming from, but we fully expect that the salaries are going to be increasing every year over the next 3 years. So isn't it better to lock him into like a long term? Like if you could lock him into a guaranteed 5 years, $40 million deal. So $8 million a year for 5 years. In 5 years, like $8 million is less than the mid-level exception, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just don't know the player he's going to be at that point. Like, I just, with big men, I tend to worry a little bit more of how that they're going to evolve. I mean, we saw he's kind of injured at the beginning of last year and lumbering, and I don't know. I'm hoping that we see the oldest Sheik. I'm really hoping that these guys do get into the best shape of their life. And then you're right. At that point, it could be a bargain. So it would be something to consider.
Okay. All right. So let's say whatever we do works out. Sheik is now a member of our team. There's a list of guys out there. We can go rolling out there with the mid-level exception, which is about $5.5 million. Sound about right?
Yeah. Yeah. It could give up to 4 years and about $24 million.
Okay. And then we also have the smaller exception, which is around $2 million. And, of course, you could take the mid-level and split it between people. So I have like a list of guys. Any of these guys I would be perfectly happy for. I'm going to rattle through this list of guys, and then you tell me who you would be most excited. These are guys who I think can actually be gotten for some portion of these exceptions, and I think could help our team. So on my list I have, and this is in no particular order, the top guy on my list is not the one I want the most, but Jonas Trebko, Corey Brewer, Jared Dudley, C.J. Watson, Thomas Robinson, Darrell Wright, Omri Caspi, Marcus Thornton, and Gerald Green. Any of those guys like pop out of you is like, that would be awesome.
I don't think I could say awesome for anybody
at the mid level.
Yeah, I mean it's just going to be a different level of what they could be. I mean, I like Jared Dudley because he offers the defensive versatility. He's a young vet, been in Gentry's system. You know, could kind of help mentor our younger guys, and he has the 3-point shot. I would say, you know, that would be a quality get. I don't know if it would be awesome. I think the one candidate on there that is the possibility for awesome, and man, what a bunch of up and downs in his career, but Gerald Green. I mean, if you could get Gerald Green from 2 years ago, you know, how dynamic could he be in this offense with AD getting him, you know, even more open shots than he got in Phoenix 2 years ago. I don't think he'll ever be great on defense, but could Ehrman, you know, help him with a couple of things? Could AD mask some stuff at the rim? I think that's the one chance where if you're looking at Dudley, I think his never happened with Jared Dudley. But, man, Gerald Green, if everything goes right, I would say he would be the guy that would excite me most on that list. How about you?
I don't know. I really like Brewer just in general. Like, that's the only other one, like, I can see. Thornton, in some respects, could have the same sort of, description that you're giving Gerald Green. Like, you know, it's hard for me to forget that first season Thornton was with New Orleans, and he had the ball in his hands all the time, and he scored at a league average rate, which ends up generating some pretty nice numbers. I don't think it's going to have that same sort of opportunity in this particular team. But I don't know, the idea of Corey Brewer and, you know, if the Pelicans are actually serious about wanting to run like crazy, like they want to actually pick up the pace, there isn't a better player in the league to get than Corey Brewer. Right. That guy, it runs all the time, nonstop, always will help you get defensive deflections and be able to get out and run. Like Brewer, in my opinion, even though he can't hit the 3-point shot consistently at all, is like the number one guy on this list for me. I would go after him with the full mid-level.
And I agree. I was blown away when I was researching my article with Brewer's transition numbers. Like, different guys have reputations, so I think most NBA fans know, yeah, Corey Brewer's great in transition. I mean, it's not great. It's elite. Like, that's where his possessions come in. And he finishes at such a high rate. Like, he is fantastic in transition. I guess my thing is that, you know, for the most part, when things do slow down, when they come to a crawl in the playoffs, or at least relatively, does he continue to help you as much, or does he hurt with his spacing? I mean, can you ever have an Evans, Brewer, a Sheik lineup? Would that even, would it be possible to even put those out there? So now this has always been the thing about my team, about the team, that I didn't like in the past, is when you had so many specialists or so many guys who were deficient in certain areas, now you had to really be careful and stagger lineups so you didn't have this guy with that guy and this guy. Like, you know, already I really want to see Gentry stagger Evans and Ashik. I did a piece on how, you know, Ashik was a lot better without Evans, and, you know, I want to see those guys stagger. Now you throw Brewer into the mix, and now you can never have those three on the court. And even when you have two of them on the court at the same time, your half court is going to be a little congested. So I guess that's my thing with Brewer, is he's been terrible the last 5 years behind the arc. I don't think we could expect it to come back. So that scares me a little.
Okay, let me ask you about a couple guys. Like, are there guys on my list or not even on my list just that have other fans have mentioned or that are linked somehow to the team that you do not want to see them on the squad? Like, they might be available out there for the mid-level, and they might even be decent basketball players, but you just they don't fit. You don't want them. Please stay away. Got anyone like that?
The one that I struggle with a little bit is Kevin Serafin.
Okay.
It seems like people tend to like him. I guess it's just in general the idea of going with a backup big man as opposed to a wing. Like, if we're talking about just using the full mid-level exception on one guy, I don't know. It's hard for me to make the argument for using it on a backup big unless it's somebody like Brandon Wright, who I think is going to get a little bit more than that. But, yeah, I mean, I've seen a couple of people throw out that name or even somebody like Ed Davis. I don't know. Could you make the argument for, again, we assume the top eight are coming back. Can you make the argument for me on spending the full mid-level exception on a backup big as opposed to, a wing who...
Yeah. Maybe. He's been kind of unsuccessful in a lot of situations.
I guess
I even have a hard time thinking someone who would make me excited in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same for me. I guess the argument would be is, like, you could look at the center position as a timeshare thing where, you know, when it's a bad matchup for a Sheik, you could bring this other type of center in. But to me, I think that guy is going to be Anthony Davis. I think, you know, when we're going against the certain teams where a Sheik is a terrible matchup, then that's when you're going to see Anthony Davis playing more minutes at center, which is what...
You can sell me on Jared Dudley again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to answer your question, the only guy, and it's funny because it's the only guy that we're rumored to be meeting with this first week of free agency, and it's Al-Farouq Aminu. You know, David Aldridge reported that we're going to be one of six teams meeting with him. He was a guy that I wouldn't have mind bringing back for, like, the biannual or $2.5 million, three. If he's meeting with six teams in the first week, he's going to get more than that. And, yeah, if I see the Pelicans hand out, you know, a three-year $15 million contract to Aminu, I think that would upset me.
Okay. You can maybe sell me Omri Caspi, too.
As far as somebody that would upset you at a...
No. Somebody who you could bring in as, like, a power forward, big man-ish alternative.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of guys. When I was putting together my list of the mid-level and biannual guys, like, once I got to the biannual guys or the guys with partial mid-level, like, I started to like that list more and more. And it's funny because the last guy that I kept off there just to for some brevity because I was over 3,500 words, but the last guy I deleted was Jonas Jerebko. So tell me why you would like him. I mean, obviously there's some connection there with Darren Erman. What would you like and how would you see his role being?
I just think Jonas Jerebko is a nice energy, power forward / small forward. He can come in and run a pick and pop when Anderson's not on or you just need to go small. I think he fits that really well. He likes to be in transition. He's not going to be demanding. His defense, like, some people seem to think because he's an energy guy, really, that his defense is great. His defense is pretty poor. But if you're just expecting the guy to come in and give you, like, 10 minutes at the power forward and 10 minutes at the small forward, I think that he would be really good for, you know, and I wouldn't expect the full mid-level for him, but I just think he's that kind of guy who could give you a nice change of pace and be your eighth or ninth guy.
So... And there's one other guy who I think that you have a little bit of a disconnect with, some of the readers you don't seem to love as much. What's your evaluation of Dante Cunningham, what you would pay him, and where you think he could fit on this team?
I think Dante Cunningham is barely more than a minimum player in my mind. And I know there's a lot of people who know, they love his hustle. They remember him flashing in and grabbing rebounds when he had no business getting them, and being this like energy guy in the middle. And I have the same great memories of him doing that and thinking, wow, I'm so glad Dell got him. But the reality is for every one of those plays that he had this spectacular moment, part of the reason why it's a spectacular moment is you didn't expect anything from him in the first place. Like, he shouldn't have been there. So it was shocking when he got there. So it's like, wow, look, he's there. But, and you forget the fact that the last 10 plays, he didn't do anything, and he wasn't in position to do anything, and he couldn't do anything. And his numbers are not dramatically, you know, better than average at anything. He doesn't take the kind of shots that makes you an efficient offense. This is just a guy that if you're playing him 25 to 30 minutes in a game, you're not helping yourself whatsoever. If he's coming in for 10 minutes just to like fill in a gap that you have to have, fine. That to me is a guy who gets paid the minimum. And if he's costing you more than the minimum, then you don't get him.
So you wouldn't give him the biannual. Let's say we get a nice wing with the mid-level. You wouldn't give him the biannual. You would go, because he is the one guy in the roster we don't have bird rights on, you know, and Jimmer, but I've already dismissed Jimmer, if you couldn't tell. So let's say we go out and get Corey Brewer. You get the guy you want. We get Corey Brewer. Now all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, six nice perimeter players and Drew, Cole, Gordon, Tyreek, Brewer, and Pondexter. So you got that stacked up. You got AD, Rhino, Ashik. Let's say they bring back Withy. So you got those four up front. What are you looking for with the biannual? Would Cunningham be in that equation, or do you just say, here's the minimum contract, if you could do better, see ya?
That's exactly what I would say.
And then what would you look for with that biannual salary as your, I guess, you know, or would you bring back a Ajinsa in that case? And I mean, so let's say
I would probably go after Ajinsa in that situation. I would rather have Ajinsa than Cunningham on this team.
Okay, so you'd bring back Ajinsa at that point, and that would kind of be, how would you feel about that 10-man rotation? So now, you know, you've basically added Brewer, brought back Ajinsa. You have essentially the same exact rotation as last year, minus Cunningham plus Brewer. What would you think of that team?
I'm thinking that that's a team I would like to see develop and play together and then figure out what pieces need to move out next year. I mean, that's a team that I would expect to be. I don't even know if I'd say a second round team. I mean, it's very hard to be a second round team in the Western Conference. But it's a team that I would like to see try to do that. And, you know, it's all about steps. Like the Golden State Warriors, they made it to the second round, then they went back to the first round, and then suddenly they're a machine. So you just got, and they did it by figuring out what pieces worked best at what time on the floor together. And so you do the same thing here. And I don't, like, let's be 100% honest. Like, Dante Cunningham, this team is a contending team now. Does Dante Cunningham get any minutes?
I mean, if...
Like David Lee couldn't get on the floor for the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, but I do think there, you know, the defensive versatility, I think, would help him out. I think, and I felt this way about the draft, it's probably the 30th guy I'll feel this way about. If he could develop a corner three, then maybe he can't. It all becomes to now, can this guy shoot? Because I think Gentry and Ehrman would like him on the defensive end. I think he's similar to some of the Golden State guys and, you know, some of the guys that I'm sure were loved in Boston and, you know, a poor man's Taj Gibson on the defensive end. I think that he could offer something there. But, yeah, I think it would be really hard. The only way I see him getting minutes, honestly, is if Ryan Anderson's traded. So now if you redo this whole thing, we've gone in assuming that the main guys will be back. But let's say Dell swings a trade where he trades Ryan Anderson for a small forward or for a center. and then we use the mid-level exception to get the other, then all of a sudden at a backup power forward spot, yeah, I would definitely bring Dante Cunningham back. I don't see him as a small forward. So the two options are either trade Rhino to create a slot for him, or you go really small on that second unit and play Cunningham and Ryan Anderson as the 4 and 5, which the more I've thought about it, I don't think would be such a bad idea. I mean, how many teams have a second unit center that is just going to, you know, run wild over DC and Cunningham compared to what that Pelican second unit? Imagine a Pelican second unit of Cole, Tyreek Evans, Quincy Pondexter, Ryan Anderson, and Dante Cunningham. I mean, we'll have the advantage on most nights there. So those are the only two ways I could see bringing Cunningham back, is if either Ryan Anderson is gone or we really commit to more small ball and our four big men are Davis, Cunningham, Ryan Anderson, and Ashik.
Okay.
Let me ask you, there was one other thing around the draft that it was just really one rumor started by one reporter in Memphis, but apparently he said that the Pelicans called Memphis basically with a framework of an Eric Gordon for Jeff Green deal. What do you think of that?
I mean, that wouldn't be – I mean, if you're just looking for a small forward, that's not a bad deal. Like, it's the same length of time. I don't like Jeff Green at all, but I don't think his game is any weaker than Eric Gordon's is in places. And I think Green could be a better matchup defender than Gordon can at this point. And Green just fits a little better. But, you know, I don't want people also to get excited at the idea of Green, because Green has disappointed every single fan base and every single person he's ever played for. Like, he was drafted 6th overall, and the Sonics were, like, every single year there was the inevitable, you know, Jeff Green's just not as good as we thought he was article comes out every time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like it's a home run. It's not like you're trading Gordon for a star, but, like, if you're trading Eric Gordon, like, you're going to have to get some warts back. Like, that's just the reality of the situation. You're not going to get a star. So,
yeah, it's just interesting. Now you go and spend the bid level on a shooting guard, can you get better value there than you can with a small forward? And
right.
Yeah, just kind of, it seems like no matter what, we're going to be filling around the edges. My last question with the mid-level is, or with these exceptions that we have, would you take an inferior player for fewer years? So let's say, so you like Corey Brewer. So Corey Brewer says, okay, I'll sign with you. 3 years, $16 million, let's do this. And then on the other hand, you have, I don't know, Alan Anderson, and I'm trying to think about somebody else is in.
Okay, first off, Alan Anderson's firmly in my do not touch with a 10-foot pole.
Okay, so
don't use Alan Anderson.
Okay, so Marcus Thornton and Will Barton, I don't know, or whoever you want. Marcus Thornton and Will Barton say, hey, we'll split up the mid-level, and then Cunningham will also come back for 1 year, and a jinx says whatever. I guess my overall point, would you take inferior players for 1 year, or would you go with a Dudley, Green, or Brewer for 3 to 4 years?
I go with a Dudley, Green, or Brewer for 3 to 4 years. I mean, because I don't think that those dollars make them untradeable, and I don't think that those dollars really interfere with your flexibility because of how much whatchamacallit's going up, the salary cap. So I'd rather have the better players for 3 to 4 years, even if they're not like needle movers. They're just, you got to have the foundation when the big fish land. That's a terrible... terrible.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's ever going to quote me on that.
I guess if we're talking about the big fish most likely being a small forward, now you have just two marginal small forwards on your roster, and let's say Dudley and Quincy Pondexter. And
yeah, but what if the big small forward says screw you, and now you can maybe get a big shooting guard? Well, you still need to fill that hole, and I'd rather be filling that hole with someone who's better than average or average than trying to scramble.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess my thing is, if Anthony Davis is going to make all these players around him better anyway, if guys are going to get open shots, like, what will be the difference in 1 year between I guess I'm curious why you don't like Allen Anderson. I don't love him, but I guess I don't see a huge difference between Allen Anderson and Jared Dudley. I see a couple of role players, Dudley slightly better, but I don't think you win 56 with Jared Dudley and 48 with, you know, with Allen Anderson. I think it's pretty marginal, so.
Well, I mean, Allen Anderson. So the reason why I don't like Allen Anderson is, his career numbers are way worse than anybody actually thinks. People think of him as a shooter. He's not really that good of a shooter. He's never been that good of a shooter. He doesn't do anything other than shoot, which he doesn't do very well. He's 32 years old, and he's already declining. So, like, I'm sorry, like, why go for that guy? You can get a guy who shoots better than him for the same price already, and they won't be 32 and already declining.
Yeah, I mean, it's just how many guys can you get for 1 year, I guess is my...
That's true.
I think any of those guys that are definitely better are taking 3 or 4 year deal. And yeah, you're right. If we sign Jared Dudley this summer and it's really his $5 million is keeping us from giving a Durant a max deal, you know, you could probably find a way to get away from that. I guess I just wouldn't want that extra headache unless it was definitely worth it this year. I just don't know if it necessarily is. I just don't see a huge gap between those guys. And I'm also curious, like, if you just people are going to want the Pelicans to sign somebody on the first day. I'm curious, if you just sit and wait around and wait for all the musical chairs to stop, like Boston kind of did this, and they got, if you flash back to about 15 months ago, Evan Turner was going to get $10 million a year. And Boston just waited everybody else out. Evan Turner was sitting there. Nobody had any money left. And they got him for $3 million. And he played fairly well last year. I mean, he played well for a guy who made...
Same thing happened with Ed Davis.
Yeah, so I'm curious if, like, if you let everybody else go out and play musical chairs, and yeah, you'll miss out on Brewer, you'll miss out on Dudley, you'll miss out on a lot of guys. History says that there'll be people there waiting at the end. And I guess I'm just to the point where I'm not going to get mad if we signed a Gerald Green or a Jared Dudley or a Corey Brewer, but I am intrigued by the option of just kind of hanging back, see who's sitting there left, and then signing two or three guys who are going to be really hungry on one-year deals when they thought they were going to get more, and then just being more aggressive in 2016. So
I 100% agree with you.
What about let me just ask you about two big risk guys, and then we'll go for different reasons. KJ McDaniels is a guy who first couple months of the season it looked like, you know, was going to get paid this summer. He has a pretty bad couple of months in Philly, and then he barely plays at all in Houston. With that, the youngest guy on the free agent market, obviously, would that be somebody who interests you at all? And if so, for what kind of contract?
I'm sure he would, mostly because of his defensive abilities. Like that's why KJ was mostly so impressive in Philly, was because he was just so athletic. If you could turn him loose into a 3-and-D guy, and his shooting wasn't great last year, but you could possibly see it turning into that. That's definitely a guy you would go for. What was the question? Like, how much would I pay him?
Yeah, what would be the biggest contract you'd get?
I would give him the biannual kind of size. I'd give him a couple million a year. Just to see if he turns into something.
Yeah. So
I wouldn't give him more than that. Like, this guy, so people know, like, everybody's probably heard of KJ McDaniels, but He shot less than 40% from the field overall, less than 30% from three overall. But his, as far as, you know, in 21 minutes, he's also getting more than a block and almost a steal game. So that's what kind of intrigues me, is this guy could really be a shutdown freak athlete defender. And if his offense comes along and he's inside of a role that you've clearly defined for him, I could see him being pretty special.
You know, there was another guy I was surprised wasn't on your list, and that was Kyle O'Quinn. But he's restricted as well. But the other guy I wanted to ask you.
I kind of stuck away. None of the restricted people, like, really made me excited when I looked at him that much. And if they did make me excited, I also knew that there would be such a price tag. It was stupid to have the conversation.
I mean, Bedell does it. I guess
he does.
I guess my thing is, like, what if, like, Jay Crowder's up there for me? What if Boston says, all right, we'll work a trade? You know, which of these free agents would be worth a lottery protected first round? I mean, I know you probably don't love Crowder, but, you know,
Crowder's pretty good. He's okay.
But so what if you're talking to him? He's willing to take the full mid-level for 4 years. Boston says, you know what, we're going to match, but we will sign and trade them to you if you want to give us the rights to whatever. Well, I mean, I guess we couldn't even do that because we would have to give them back some salary. So even that would be tricky. So never mind. The other guy I wanted to ask you about that would be a risk, curious what you would think. Let's say it takes the biannual to get him. Would you be interested at all in JaVale McGee?
No. I'm sorry, like, no.
Minimum salary, nothing?
No. Like, the guy's just a head case. Like, it's, you know, you and I had, like, a little bit of a thing back and forth about DeMarcus Cousins in Sacramento and, you know, going after, like, JaVale McGee has all the same mental issues, like, dealing with teams and being a team player that DeMarcus Cousins is, except, like, he has none of the basketball talent. He's just an athlete. So, no thanks.
Yeah.
Not going to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of just random guys on the list. Any interest in bringing Jay Smith back? Jay Smitty?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind having Jason Smith back at all. Like, that was actually one of the thoughts I had, was when you were saying, like, let's say we send Ryan Anderson somewhere for a small forward, and we need a backup power forward, Jason Smith would be top of my list.
There's a lot. That's the thing, is there's a lot of interesting backup power forward. I mean, Luis Scola could probably be had for cheap. Yeah. You know, Amari Stoudemire. It really seems to me that if you move Ryan Anderson, and I believe he's going to have a great year, but if you move Ryan Anderson, like, there's so many backup bigs who are score-first bigs on this free agent market that you could replace a lot of his scoring with, if you could move Anderson for something that would help your team out a little more. So
yeah.
I don't know. And there are some conspiracy theorists out there that Anderson's been the one guy that in interviews, Gentry hasn't mentioned. So we'll see.
Let me, before we continue, and I got, five guys I wanted to talk to you about real quick. And it falls in line with your idea of these guys are pretty good, but they're not like names. These aren't the guys that, like, every GM is going to think, I need a capable shooting guard, and this guy will be the top of the list. He'll be like fourth on your list or fifth on your list. And that means that, you know, maybe the market's going to dry up by the time people get to these guys, and they're not necessarily going to demand huge money. I want to think, do you think these guys could fall into that, A, because maybe I'm just being unrealistic, and B, do you think that they would help you? And they're all three, the three first guys I want to talk to you about are just guards. So first one on my list, Rodney Stuckey. He's a free agent this year. He was signed only a one-year deal with the Pacers. He just feels like that kind of guy to me. Like, no one is going to think of Stuckey as like a shooting guard, point guard, combo guard guy that they need to go get to be the missing piece. But I just feel like he's that guy who could be just amazing as your third guard. So what do you think about Rodney Stuckey? You think he could last like that and you could get him for a, you know, $3-5 million a year, and that is he worth it?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could definitely get him for that price. I don't know where he would fit here. I would guess that, you know, you'd probably have to move Cole. I think that's another thing. I think it's interesting. You see a lot of guys like that who could maybe be a solid value. A lot of them are at the guard position or the backup power forward position where it would be almost impossible to get playing time now. So, yeah, I think it would require a couple of moves at minimum moving Norris Cole. But, yeah, I mean, I think he could be a good reserve guard off the bench. I just think Tyreke Evans is coming off the bench and the ball is going to be in his hands so much and he's going to be such a high-volume scorer off that bench. I just don't know if that's another need for this team.
Okay. What do you think about Jeremy Lin?
Yeah, I mean, same situation.
Do you think that, like, let's say, like, just in a vacuum, who's better, Norris Cole or Jeremy Lin?
Oh, I'd say Norris Cole just because of his ability to defend. Again, if you're talking about the ball being in Tyreke's hands so much and then even Ryan Anderson getting a bunch of shots, what are you getting out of Jeremy Lin? Like, where else is he going to help you? If you're telling me that the guards are wiped out and all of a sudden we have nothing off the bench, we have Drew and Eric Gordon starting, somehow Cole is gone, Tyreke Evans is gone, and now we have to start, you know, we need a backup point guard who could spot start if needed, then, yeah, maybe you could sell me on Lin over Cole, but this team is what it is. I don't see how Jeremy Lin helps out this team more than Norris Cole.
Okay. Last player. And I don't know. I think I might be having a little bit of fantasy here. Lou Williams. You think he's getting paid this summer?
No.
Like, you don't think he's getting paid this summer?
No. I think there's going to be a couple of guys who...
He was pretty fantastic in Toronto. Like, that's the thing is, like, this is a guy who legitimately has, like, amazing true shooting percentages every year. He is a difference maker in some respects.
Yeah, I mean, I guess getting paid, to me, it's like there's this invisible fence or, like, you know, this like the mid-level exception is kind of this bar that I only see certain guys go over. And, like, it's usually guys who are young and have potential, you know, people see as could possibly be much better than they are, or quasi-all-star guys. To me, I always see guys like Lou Williams as they'll get the mid-level or lower. You know, but I would have probably said the same about Jody Meeks. I guess the difference is, again, Jody Meeks was younger last year, and I could see Detroit selling themselves, you know, on him possibly getting better. But as the saying goes, it only takes one a-hole. I just think that usually that GM spends on a guy that's younger. So I can't see Lou Williams getting more than the mid-level, and I would even be surprised if he got the full mid-level from a team. Because, again, if you have the mid-level, that pretty much means that that's the only significant move that you're going to make that year because you're already past the cap, you know, going into the offseason. I can't see a team selling themselves on, all right, we got one move, we've got one bullet to fire, let's fire it on Lou Williams. So it's even hard for me to see him getting the full mid-level.
Yeah. I mean, the guy drew 5 free throws a game.
Yeah.
In only 24 minutes. So, I mean, he's just, there's a lot there that I really like. I feel like in a lot of respects, he's a better scorer than any guard we have on our team.
I mean, do you think Norris Cole is a tradable asset at all that you could get anything solid for? Or, like, can you include him in it? Like, would Indiana be interested in a Mirosic and Norris Cole for Roy Hibbert? Would you do that trade? I don't know. You know, I do agree. There's a lot of good guards out there, but what kind of value could Norris Cole have in trade?
All right. Yeah, I don't know how. I don't think Norris Cole's going to be worth very much. Like, he was worth John Salmons before, so I doubt it's going to be that much. He played a little better, but nobody's going to be banking on that. I just want to get your opinion. Like, do you think this would even be helpful? Paul Pierce opted out in Washington. If Paul Pierce's agent mentions that he'd love to mentor the young Pelicans team, which I'm not saying that's even going to happen. There seems to be, like, he has an idea of a couple places he wants to try. But let's just say he looks at the Pelicans and says, you give me the mid-level exception this year, I'm there. Would you want Paul Pierce on the team? Do you think he'd help us?
Yeah, no doubt. I don't think he's a possibility. That's why.
Would you go after him?
I don't think that matters. I think at that age in their career, these guys know where they're going. At this point in free agency, I fully believe the rumors that it's between Washington and the Clippers. He's not wanting to be wine or dine or sold. He knows all the teams in the NBA. He knows where he wants to be. So I don't think it's a point of going after. I think at that point in the NBA, it's the reverse. Their agents let the teams know who they're interested. I don't think it's a matter of whether we could call and sell ourselves. So,
right.
So yeah, but no, I mean,
just a stupid fantasy.
Yeah. Which there's a lot of this time of year, and I don't blame people for having them, but I think, you know, I think it's, I fully believe that it's between Washington and the Clippers for him.
All right. And, one last thing, I want to mention this. I've never brought it up before, but I think it's going to happen again, so I'm going to bring it up. I think there is one player that 2 years ago was vastly underrated. I thought he was going to end up in Houston, that they were just going to pull this off and it was going to infuriate me because he's going to have a low contract. His contract actually ended up only being $1 million over what I predicted. I think it's going to probably happen again this year. Paul Millsap just feels to me like he's going to be one of those power forwards who is just third on everybody's list. And unless Atlanta decides to just put down a big chunk of change for him, which I don't feel like Atlanta's going to do that, but unless they do, I don't think Paul Millsap's going to get paid again. And I don't think that he fits with the Pelicans necessarily. I don't think there's any way that we could go and get him. I still think he'll probably be getting like $8.5 or $9 million a year. But let's just say, like, if you could release all of your, say Omer Sheik walk, let Ajinsa walk, with the guarantee that Paul Millsap would join this team, would you do that?
No,
because I really love him, but that's a hard match.
I mean, at that point, I would be looking at, I'd be right back at having a top-heavy roster. I would only have, what, like 7 guy. I would have to let Norris Cole go. Mm-hmm. So I'd still need a backup point guard. I'd still need a small forward. I would still need a legit center. I mean, I would just need so much. And I would only have the room exception to kind of get that with.
And you have Anderson to move around and maybe get something.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be it. If I had Anderson, if I had some other kind of deal lined up where I could just get depth, then, yeah, I mean, I would probably do it. And, I mean, that wouldn't even affect the Kevin Durant dream, I wouldn't think. I mean, you could have a front line of Durant, Millsap, and Davis. It wouldn't be ideal, but it would work, or even, you know, Millsap off the bench. Yeah, I mean, I would do it just because I think when you could acquire higher level talent, and I think he would be a terrific fit in the scheme, it would be jarring. You would have to do a lot of other moves to kind of make it all work. And, you know, I don't know. I guess that would be my curious thing is, does Dell have 2 or 3 offers on the table for Ryan Anderson, Tyreke Evans, or Eric Gordon, where if something happens, you know, he can move those guys and make it work? Or Is it just completely fixed into let's just add depth and, you know, he's really curious to see what the core he put together is able to do with a new coach and with some health and continuity, because they keep preaching the same message of, and this is something you've talked about a lot, of when a player's prime is, and a lot of the players are heading into it. So, you know, would they, I guess I would just really wonder how much Dell and Gentry like love the players that we have versus they just realize that they're not at their highest value right now. And this year is going to be about winning as many games as possible and also increasing their value and looking for bigger opportunities than are out there this summer. That would be the number one question I would want to answer. Does Dell really love these guys, or, you know, does he just think that they're at an all-time low value right now?
All right. Yeah. I agree. Do you think Paul Millsap is going to get underpaid again?
I mean, the interesting thing, the word out here in Utah is that they're looking to bring him back and might even move Favors.
So, wow.
Yeah, so they might move Favors for other pieces and then give Millsap a big contract to finish here. So I think,
you know, like that a Gobert Millsap front line is pretty nice to think about.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a really interesting offseason. I'm curious to see. I mean, as of right now, it looks like Portland is the team that, you know, could really be hit the hardest. It's starting to look, I mean, if DeAndre Jordan goes to the Mavericks, which looks like could happen, and the Clippers can't replace him, would you, let's just say we add Corey Brewer and bring Alexis Ajinsa back. Those are our 10-man rotation. The Clippers lose DeAndre Jordan and can't really replace him. They get a center like Bismack Biyombo, I don't know, to be a poor man's version. Who would you say is the better team at that point, the Pelicans or Clippers?
Pelicans.
Yeah, so I'm really curious to see all the other dominoes that fall, who goes where, you know, like little things like David West opting out was really interesting.
Yeah, I don't get that one at all. Yeah. Sorry, David. Like, you're 35, dude. And take your $12 million and go.
He's a guy that maybe he has a backdoor promise with the Knicks and, you know, he goes there. But if he misses out on the first couple of days, that's where you're looking at your guy who could – I mean, would it be insane if David West's best offer is the mid-level exception?
No, not at all.
I mean, we saw
– I wouldn't offer him more than that.
We saw Kirilenko kind of do this a couple of years ago where he opted out of 10 and he got, what, 3?
Yeah.
So, that'll be, I just think it's going to be a really interesting summer. So with that said, to finish this off, we got to make our predictions just so we could look like idiots, you know, a week from now. The Pelicans, what is their, what's their offseason going to look like? What's going to happen?
I think that they re-sign Omar Sheik. They re-sign, they don't re-sign. They retain Cole. I think Ajinsa leaves. I think they fill in a couple they fill in a share time small forward for to work with Quincy Pondexter. And
you got
to
give me a name.
I have to give you a name?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with... I don't think they're actually going to get Brewer. I'm actually going to stick with Jarebko.
So that'll be the big free agent acquisition that people are going to get excited about is Jonas Jarebko?
Yeah. I really don't think there's going to be much in the way of free agent acquisition excitement. I think this is going to be a pretty dull offseason unless a Ryan Anderson trade happens, in which something kind of fun could happen, but that's it.
Does Anthony Davis sign his extension and when?
He definitely signs it. I would probably expect that he signs it the first month sometime, but I actually bet he's going to sign it closer to camp sometime, but I have no worries, not even a tiny bit of worry that he's going to sign it.
Yeah. All right. So I'm with you, Ashik and Norris Cole. get re-signed. I say that we do sign a free agent. I'm gonna go with Gerald Green. Get signed using the full mid-level exception. I will agree that Ajinsa's gone. I think Cunningham is going to leave too. And I think that we use the biannual on Jeff Ayers out of San Antonio. And then we fill out the roster with different guys from Summer League or minimal deals, Jeff Withy. But, yeah, I think we finish out our rotation with Gerald Green and Jeff Ayers. And that's pretty much going to be it for our moves. I think Ashik will get a 3-year deal, and Anthony Davis, I say, agrees to his extension before his camp, which I think is July 13th or 14th. So sometime in the first 2 weeks, he agrees to his extension.
Okay. Oh, and if all of that happens, do you think that's a good or a bad offseason?
I think any offseason that includes Anthony Davis signing that is a good offseason. Everything else is gravy, and the improvement of this team is going to be about conditioning and these guys getting in shape, getting healthy, and getting better over the summer more than any player acquisition.
Okay. So thanks, everybody, for listening to the In the Know Free Agent Edition. I'm sure as the free agency continues, we will have more of these podcasts to talk about the moves that do happen, especially the ones that make Michael and I look like morons because we didn't predict them or even consider them.
For the ones who get going when the going gets tough, and the ones who know we're tougher together. For the pathfinders breaking new ground, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as fast access to experts and 24/7 customer support. Because we know you have people depending on you, so you can always depend on us. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.